Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and this is your host, Sister Pamela Muhammad, and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network, and this show discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion with legal minds, with experts, with community activists, with people who are interested in issues surrounding the legal system. On our show, we discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failures of the legal system to give justice to Black people and their Black families. Tonight, our show is entitled, Are There Violent and Unsafe Conditions at the Mississippi Prison that Violate the Constitution? And we are talking about Parchman Prison. It's also known as Parchman Farm Prison. So we will be asking about those failures, and we will be asking about the negative impact these failures have had on Black people and their Black family. On this show, ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law, but all too often, this is not the action that we see. Our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct that is often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. Let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions which are in the best interest of the people. Again, tonight, our title is Violent and Unsafe Conditions at Mississippi Prison are alleged to violate the Constitution. And there's really a lot of articles, a lot of talk in the news about the conditions at Parchman Prison. So I think we'll be able to make some conclusions, and we have some really great guests. Our guests tonight are people who are in the state of Mississippi, who have been in that community, and so I think we can get some great roundtable discussion on this issue. I'd like to go ahead and introduce our brother, Kareem Muhammad. Now, Brother Kareem is with the Greenville, Mississippi Local Organizing Committee. And, oh, they're just such a wonderful, wonderful array of talent and people who are dedicated to seeking justice, people who are dedicated to helping the community, making our community safe and decent places to live. They have professionals from all walks of life in their Greenville, Mississippi Local Organizing Committee. So Brother Kareem is here tonight, and Brother Kareem is a native of St. Louis, Missouri. He attended Forest Park College in St. Louis, where he got a degree in African American Studies as well as mortuary science. He also, I think, went on to achieve a dual degree in liberal arts and psychology at the University of Arkansas in Little Rock. Brother Kareem has traveled in Senegal, West Africa, and he, after that, he said he returned with a broader understanding of the contributions of black people worldwide. So I want to go ahead and open up Brother Kareem's mic. As he says in his resume, he is a community-based organizer and trainer. So let me go ahead and open up Brother Kareem's mic. And Brother Kareem.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening to you, sir, and assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam, and for those that are still celebrating and fasting, Ramadan Mubarak.
Yes, sir, Ramadan Kareem. And I know if there were a couple of other people who may be part of the LOC, and if they are in the host queue, I would just suggest that you press the number one to get into the host queue on this conversation, so you can, you know, be with our Brother Kareem. But until such time, Brother Kareem, you and I, we can talk about this conversation. Now, as, you know, I announced, this particular topic is violent and unsafe conditions at the Mississippi prison. Oh, and let's see, I want to go ahead and open up the mic. I think I have one more person right now, 501. Yes. Yes, welcome to our show. Would you like to introduce yourself? 501, I opened up the mic. I was thinking that, yes. Welcome
Arkansas.
To our show.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Darby Conley. I'm a coordinator for the local organizing committee of Little Rock, North Little Rock, Arkansas, which is branched off of Mississippi. And Mississippi is considered our headquarters. Brother Kareem is also working in the Arkansas area, doing a great job, and I'd like to thank him for that.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. Give me your name one more time, sir.
Brother Darby.
Brother Darby
Conley.
Darby Conley. Okay. All right. And so, again, this topic tonight, we're going to talk about Parchman Prison. And as everybody knows, Jay-Z, our brother, according to Hip Hop, I think it's DX, they reported that there was a lawsuit filed by our brother Jay-Z, Social Justice Division of Team Rock, along with Yo Gotti. This is the April 21st article where it talks about how I think they had 200 inmates at the Mississippi State Penitentiary at Parchman. They have secured legal representation for these inmates, according to the article. And as we also may know, the Justice Department on Wednesday, April 20th, it issued a report, and in that report, they confirmed that Mississippi violates constitutional rights of people who are incarcerated at Parchman. And so with that being said, this is some of what we want to talk about. Now, the violations are for the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution, where there are violations alleging that there is cruel and unusual punishment going on with the inmates, that they are being subjected to violence, that they are being subjected to harm, that they are being subjected to stabbings, weapons, violence, untimely responses. They're saying that there's suicides, there are deplorable conditions. And I know you all know about this because there's a history to Parchman Prison. So, Brother Kareem, did you want to talk to us about this prison? Where is this prison?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Yes, absolutely, ma'am. And, again, thank you for the opportunity to allow us to come on to talk about this dying information and topic and issue that really is out there in the front of everyone, but it's really, it's an issue that everyone tends to put in the back of their mind. We're becoming numb about
it. Yes, sir. Thank you for coming.
When we think about prisons as a whole, but particularly Mississippi, you talked about where that Mississippi Parson Reform is in what is called Yazoo County. It's in the city of Yazoo, Mississippi. They called it a little desert. And it was a farm that Caucasians in the 1860s owned, and they got the name from the owners of the farm, which was Parson Farm. And it was a plot of land that was carved out for the purpose of creating a prison up under then Governor James Vardaman, who was a stout racist out of the Greenwood area. And the purpose of the prison was to break all black defiance, to create a labor force of individuals that would be submissive to the white so-called way of life. And so Parson Reform was developed for one of the major pieces was for the purpose of defiance, the breaking the defiance of the black man in Mississippi. And secondly, it was developed so that during this time period, lynching and execution, mob execution, the sentiments during this period of time was changing, where individuals were thinking about business and economy, and so they began to see that lynching blacks out in the public didn't look too good. So they began to erect buildings such as the prison apartment so they could do they lynching and mob killing inside the prison. So Parson Farm was built in 1904, and it's been there creating that type of an atmosphere from day one.
Okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, and I think that's really important, and, we can come back to it, but as you talk about convict leasing and the system that developed right during Reconstruction where, because of the economics, they wanted to put black people back on
right.
the system of free labor.
Right.
And so I've got one article that talks about how children as young as 6 or 7 were leased to private farmers and business owners ahead.
And just the ironic part about that, prior to 1865, see, white folks used to always think about us when we were enslaved that we were thieves anyway. We would steal something because that was just our nature. So prior to 1865, if a black person stole a hog or something, they just take them in the back of the barn and whip them. Or they were just depending on who the person was, whether it was a good worker or what, as to how punishment. But after 1865, when black people began to demand rights, and began to demand to be considered as an equal, then they came up what was called convict leasing. Now that same black person that was just considered as someone, oh, that's John, he just stole a pig. Now Miss Joanne that stole that pig, now she would be arrested. She would be arrested because they didn't want those types of individuals out in the public. They wanted their way of life to be established that black people stayed in their place and white folks had a place. And so the convict leasing system created that atmosphere where they can take and do what they wanted to do with blacks to create this, what they call the white way of life.
And Mr. Darby, Mr. Conley, if you want to chime in, please do, because I think we thought it was so important to lay the base for Parchment Farm, which, did you want to go right ahead? Yes, sir.
I would just say you're absolutely right, because when we think about the prison of Parchment Farm, which was really the first state prison in this country, Mississippi has always been the model for black defiance and white supremacy. And so Parson Reform was erected for that purpose. And you see to date the same condition. Now, back in 1865, even though they had slave-like conditions, the lifestyle of blacks back then, doing up under that period of time, they might have looked out for blacks a little bit more because they knew to treat them a certain way they could get more work out of them. But as time went on and it was more about money, then they began to spend less on the care of blacks. They started spending less on the building and the maintenance of the building, and it was all about how much that they could get from the labor of those individuals. Many of us remember the movie Life. That's a real story that happened in Park Reform. And you had brothers up there, they would get locked up. My wife and I was talking the other day about they would lock us up based on what a dog said. If a so-called woman would get raped, they go get the hound dogs. And if the hound dogs ran them to Darby's house, Darby couldn't have nothing to do with it. But just because the dog ran over there, they would take Darby and lynch him. And so this is the condition that we, our people live up under. But we got to understand, regardless of all of that, our people fought for equality, fought to be established as a right to do their own and be self-determination. And so we're living today in an environment where this prison system is still used for the same purpose, and that is economics. It's the same condition, but the conditions are worse now because the laws have changed where the prison system does not have to hold fast to federal laws anymore. It's the state that takes care of state issues. So if states decide that they do not want to adhere to federal laws and no one is going to fight against it or fight for equal rights, the states can do what they want to do. And that's what we're looking at when we look at the conditions of what prison reform. Had it not been for them brothers giving those pictures to us and those murders that happened in 2019 to bring awareness to the conditions, it's just like everything else that we see out there. If it had not been for those pictures, it would not have been exposed. But because of the pictures that we got from the brothers and because of the boots on the ground, the grassroots organizers up out here taking those pictures and putting them out there, exposing them, and thank God for social media, it was another day. And so we had an opportunity to expose the conditions of our people, the inhumane conditions of our people, the rape that was going on in there with our people, the convictions of young boys that they got 15, 16 years old living among mass murders. The people did not see or understand what was going on. And the second part, Sister Pamela, we got to understand. This is the Mississippi Delta. This is the population where the masses of black people, poor black people, live at. So the masses of our people in prison are from the Mississippi Delta. And our people down here, the conditions are so terrible that they got so much other issues that they got to address with. When little people go to jail, they ain't got too much concern to have to worry about little poo-poo unless little poo-poo come up dead. Other than that, the condition that he's living up under, they ain't trying to find out what that is. And it's not because they're not concerned, but it's because there's other things that's facing black poor people in the Delta, such as the light bill, such as poverty, such as inadequate house, inadequate health. And so poo-poo now becomes the back burner.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Because, you know, as you're talking about the conditions in the Delta, along with this recent finding of the inhumane conditions at Parchman Prison, we also had an article on the Final Call that talked about Mississippi injustice, and it talked about the extreme sentencing, how black people were kept in jail for life under these habitual offender laws. So as we talk about who's in Parchman Prison, it sounds like there are some people that don't need to be there for sure, and it's a result of the monetization, the involuntary servitude, the violations of the 13th Amendment. Because our sister, Anissa Muhammad, wrote an article where she talks about how people, sister was automatically sentenced to life because maybe perhaps they had committed a crime, a violent crime, 20 or 30 years ago. They had served that time out working, and then perhaps they may have committed a drug crime, which maybe is a nonviolent felony. And because of the system, the habitual offender system in the state of Mississippi, these people were automatically sentenced to life, after being on the streets for all this time. So I think this is another example of what is making up this unsafe condition and the criminal justice system as a whole in the state of Mississippi. So that's something we wanted to talk about. Yes, sir.
You said it right there, the criminal justice system. You said it right there.
That's
exactly what it is, a criminal justice. I remember years ago, F. Lee Bailey, one of the greatest attorneys in our century, F. Lee Bailey out of Indianapolis, he was under one of the O.J. Simpson's dream team. And F. Lee Bailey said that he could get over 50% of the people in prison out just on technicality alone. So there's many of our people that's in prison that should not be there. But again, we got to reflect back on what Martin Black Muhammad told us always, to look at the root of something. And so what is the root of the incarceration of our people? And it's about money. The prison system is a big business. They take our brothers and sisters and take them to prison, and they take them to prison, and where the little brother would not work on the streets for no McDonald's, for no $8 an hour. They lock him up, give him 25 years for burglary, and now they got him working for Tyson. They got him working for IBM. They got him working for other industrial, big industrial companies that's making tables, making furniture for these companies. And so it's big labor. Not only that, the same system is the system where they try. They try to experiment medical conditions that they are putting out in the public. Before they try it out, they send it into the prisons and let the experiment on the prison. This has always been like that. So it's several factors as to why the prison industrial complex is functioning in this for the overall objective of economics and control.
Yes, sir. And as you said, again, going back to the convict leasing system, prisoners were leased for $9 a month. They say it was the cheapest workforce they could get were convicts. And that's according to Oshinsky, who wrote a book, Worse Than Slavery. And then he goes on to say in that same book, this is back in the 1880s, how one in six black prisoners died because, of course, unlike chattel slavery, they had less incentive to care for the lessees, the people they were leasing. It wasn't like your property. It was people that you leased, so you didn't really care as much as if it were your property. And, again, I think as we bring this to this current DOJ report where we are seeing that there are failures to take action to correct problems. This is what the Department of Justice report is saying as violations of the Eighth Amendment. I don't know if this is going to go back to slavery, or is it just they're saying, because these historical problems at Parchment have been known, but these Eighth Amendment violations, the Eighth Amendment talks about conditions of confinement. That can violate Eighth Amendment. The conditions that deprive inmates of the minimal civilized measure of life and necessities. The right to be free from excessive force. Now, this is case law. Right to be free from demonstrably unsafe conditions. This is what the Eighth Amendment assures people under the Constitution. So now you've got this DOJ report saying that, Parchment has all that and more. They've got homicides, they've got suicides, they've got drugs being found. What do we know? And again, if anyone who's in the host is part of the team that Brother Brother Muhammad wanted to bring, pressed the number
like
one
Brother
to get into the host queue. I see I have a 313 area code, and so I want to know is, what do you think? Let me just go ahead and open up the mic for our brothers and sisters, and we're going to open up the general panel for discussion as well. Brother 313, I opened up your mic.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Oh, wa alaikum salam. This is Sister Ula.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I really am beginning to enjoy the show a great deal because I didn't know how to get on it. I didn't know. I just guessed. That called the same number that we used on Thursday, which was to Ava, and that's when I was blessed me to get this show. But the law,
due to a lie.
Yes, ma'am. The law is against. I noticed because of the work I do, the law appears to be against honest people, people who really are concerned, as we see what our beloved minister has undergone. People who are really concerned about the elevation of their people, the law appears to be against them. Yes, ma'am.
Well, and you're right to a degree in the sense is that when she went back to convict leasing, even with convict leasing, it was targeted again after 1865 because a lot of blacks that would begin to get elected, they begin to come together and abolish the black codes. And so from that, they came up with the convict leasing as another way to control. But there was a lot of whites that got caught up in that system as well. And that is what part of what you see when you see the Republicans and the Democrats. It's pro-white trash against the aristocrats. And we always get in the middle of that or get caught up in the middle of that. But when you're talking about the total causation and reason for prison, it's about economics. It's about control and economics. It's about controlling the majority of blacks that are in defiance, that refuse to conform, and then to get economics. And that's what it was about doing the convict leasing. At the beginning of Sister Pamela with convict leasing, Bessa Forrest was one of the first Europeans that they gave a convict leasing a job to in Mississippi. And he was known for racist behavior. The Mississippi would pay them to get the convicts, the so-called convicts. But later on, they begin to realize that they can get paid from the private planters. And so they turned around, and that's when the money began to start being made. So it's all about money and about black defiance.
Yes. And thank you so much, Sister Ula, for your comment. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate your calling in and supporting us, sis. So, yes,
thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
If I may chime in out of Arkansas.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead. Yes, sir. Please.
Just piggyback on, following up on what Brother Kareem has been speaking on. In Arkansas, our governor today has refused funding for more rental assistance for the community in the state of Arkansas. He has also, in other reports, have stated that he's wanting to increase the funding for more prisons since the pandemic, this influx of resources that the state of Arkansas has received. So I just want to just piggyback on what Brother Kareem was saying there.
Yes, sir.
And
you know what?
Like,
you have an excellent point, sir. A couple of weeks ago, we had a show with an attorney out of Arkansas by the name of Jimmy Morris, and our conversation was about the backlog of cases that are going on since the pandemic is at a pace where people are being held and their cases are not being disposed of. And so it seems like if anything, and I'm just putting that out there, if you're familiar with that situation, in the state of Arkansas, where these public defenders are really refusing to try some of these cases. They say they have too many cases. So it doesn't seem like prisons are the answer. They need to spend money on lawyers and representation. Yes, sir.
And they're backed up so much to there. I know that there was several inmates I was informed that had their cases backed up almost 2 years. So that somewhat violates the speedy trial, but they had some, I don't know what the clause, exactly, where they were using that because of the corona. And so it just is sad.
But that is another reason why we say that this is a whole systematic issue that we're dealing with, because we're going to come back now, Sister Pamela, to Mississippi enforcement form, what we did in 2018 and 19 during this agitation.
Yes, and if I could say
one thing,
I just want to say, and we can talk about it, but we've gone from just the economic incentive to depopulation. The intention now is the depopulation agenda as well. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Mm-hmm. And so when it was exposed as to what was going on in the community and what created the concern, was not necessarily the condition. It was not necessarily the cry out for the inhumane food. What caught the attention was there was repeated death right behind one another. And so based on that, that created national attention. And from that, that began to become a big cry with grassroots organizers here in Mississippi, the local organizer committee, Mississippi on the Move, and other grassroots organizations working with Rock Nation coming down to help support it. But in the process of that, we also began to meet, organize, and come up with demands. And from that, we was able to meet with the state Black Caucus. And with that, we were able to demand that they put some of our people from the state senate onto the Department of Correction state board, which they didn't have at the first. And so we were able to get that done first and foremost to make sure that we had an oversight going in there to look at what we had been putting down, that they wouldn't drop the ball. So we was able to get Senator Derek Simmons and others on there to make sure that they could, because they from the community, that they would respond back to us. The second thing we did when we met with the state senate, we began to put demands down for them and put recommendations. And one of the recommendations that they put down was the fact what you just said. We talked about the caseload and how the caseload was so backed up. And what we recommended to them was that we have a young attorneys that's coming out of college that's willing to work with the state representatives to be able to go in there and review those cases. And so this is still something that's on the table. We're still working on, because they asked us to put a list together to work with the judges to make sure that those individuals will be able to do that. So we work with a Daruba here, Mayor Eric Simmons. All these are lawyers that work with the expungement program and other programs to do that. So this did not come out of a vacuum, this law or this decision that they came down about the inhumane punishment. I mean, conditions of prosecution reform. That came because there were some grassroots organizers on the ground that made this a national attention, and we kept our boot on their neck until they did something. But it's not over with. This is just the beginning, because there's got to be an oversight to make sure some of those. This is the same thing that happened in 1974. Same thing here in Mississippi, the same condition, and nothing happened. By 78. The Department of Farm was back at what it said it was going to do. And they gave the same ruling that they just gave this year. They gave the same ruling in 74. Cox in Greenville, Mississippi, the federal court here gave the same ruling and demanded Department of them to make changes. But the oversight committee was not there.
Yeah, because as we move into more self-governance and we move into having people at the table that have our stakeholders that may have relatives that you know in this community, I think this is where we can see some progress, as well as you know we will always talk about building, because as you mentioned earlier, sometimes the poverty is a driver when we're not building our own communities, when we're not making our own jobs. And I think it's so important, like you mentioned earlier when I was speaking to you about the great migration from these areas, because, you know, a lot of people would say, well, why should we care? Why should people in New York care about conditions of people in Mississippi? You know, why should people in Detroit care about the conditions of people in Mississippi? And I just kind of wanted to give that back to you, Brother Muhammad, if you have any anything you'd like to talk about.
And basically with that, we just say is that we made this statement here on this show as well, is that punk reform in Mississippi has been a model for white supremacy, domination, and control. So whatever you see going on in Mississippi, it's going on all over the country. See, as you talked about the migration of our people going up north, they left here with the promise that they was going to a new promised land. But when they got to Chicago, St. Louis, New York, they realized that the promise that they had been told was a lie. And so they started telling them another lie, told them that now in order to get the promised land, you got to die. Because they still seen the conditions that they was left, that they had left here with discrimination, inadequate housing. It just wasn't as harsh as it was in Mississippi, because they liberalism up north does it, white supremacy in a different manner. But it still was the same thing. So when we see what's going on in Parchment, then we got to understand Chicago, that's our little cousin in Cook County as well. That's our little cousin in Illinois. That's our little cousin in New York City, in Attica. That's what we got to understand. The same condition that we are being exposed to here is the same condition that our people in other state prisons are going through, and the federal prison. The federal prison has gotten worse than the state, and it didn't used to be like that. But it's the reason why, because the majority of people in federal prison now are black people, where 25 years ago, it wasn't like that. Most people who was in federal prison was Caucasian, high crime individual. But now the majority of the people, even in federal prison, are young black males with drug offense. First time offense of drug got 20 years because it is about control, domination and control. And so the reason why we should concern ourselves is because the same thing, we ain't even talked about the money that the prisons make off of when someone go to jail, putting commissary money on their commissary, having them make a phone call, and they got to spend that money. That's all big money. And our people who don't have no money in the first place now got to pull money that they didn't have to make sure their son has something, because they're afraid that if he don't have nothing, he got to get it from somebody else that might rape him. So this happens all over the country. You can get it whether in Jefferson City, Missouri. You can get in Kansas City, Missouri, wherever there's a state prison, and the majority of our people are at. And just the other ironic part about it, Sister Pamela, it used to be 25, 30 years ago, white correctional officers was controlling the prison. Now it's black correctional officers controlling the prison, and the conditions are still the same. They might not beat us like they used to do 25 years ago, but they're turning their head to the inadequate food. They turn their head to the inadequate health care. They turn their head to the inadequate housing because they want a job.
Yes, sir. I'm going to take this caller. I mean, you're exactly right. Like you're saying, there's 2.3 million inmates, and that was, I think, back in 2014. I'm not sure what the numbers are now. And they're saying that since the 1970s, there was a 500% increase in prison and incarceration in this country. So, I mean,
yeah.
Okay. Let me take this call. Caller 617.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Pamela, Attorney
Pamela
Ingram.
Ma'am.
and your beautiful guests. I'm calling from Boston. This is Sister Lisa Muhammad. And with you all, walaikum salam. And with you all talking about the prison system, it brought me back. I went in the room and I got the final call that called executed on the front page. And on page 10, I didn't realize that it was highlighted in yellow until I looked at it again. And everything that I want to, can I please read this right quick, please?
Please.
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you. A prison advertisement reads, would you like to be transferred to a minimum security prison where you would have a private room, television, access to your own stereo, better food, as well as have an opportunity to make $30 a month just for getting high on heroin and amphetamines and morphine? And then it goes on to say the other highlighted part. It says that despite activities ranging from psychosurgery to chemical brain alterations, Dr. Bertrand Brown, director of the NIMH, recently announced his support of continued behavior modification programs. Dr. Brown boasted that the programs have proved a marked success in making many people lead more normal lives. He acknowledges that as many as 3,000 psychotherapists are conducting ongoing experimentation on as many as 60,000 subjects in hospitals, schools, and prisons. So that's what's going on.
Yes, further going on.
And with this, it's outrageous. I don't understand why we are not coming together and doing something. And then it just came across me, all these prisoners that's been incarcerated for a crime that they did not commit, 32 years, 25 years, and then they're being released, and then they're just given nothing, hardly anything, and that's half their life. All their life is just gone, and most of them and the majority of them are black men. So I'm enjoying the program. Thank you so much, Pamela, for letting me speak on this, and I continue to listen in, and I just love your program every Tuesday. I tune in every single Tuesday to get my dose on what's happening with our black people. Thank you so much. Assalamu alaikum.
Well, alaikum salam, ma'am, and thank you. Oh, praise be to Allah.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful call.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, I think that article that you brought up was in the depopulation section.
And
it's an article from, wasn't it like the 1960s that the final call or Muhammad Speaks had, or, you know, they published that, letting black people know. They had discovered that this was going on and informing our people. I think that's so important.
Yes,
and it came
that's right.
From
1975. Nation of Islam, the wicked history of American medical racism. That was it. Exactly right. Thank you again.
And they would have articles like that in the 62, 64, 65 in Mississippi about Boston reform. They would have the same type of articles. You want to come down and have a summer vacation in our cool little resort here in Boston reform? Come on, all of you so-called liberals. They would advertise about Boston reform. Boston reform was used really harsh during the 1964-65 during the civil rights movement. That's where they would just take their time. And Dr. Hollis Watkins out of Jackson, Mississippi, he's one of our pioneers that experienced the same situation that others of our pioneers, Daniel Heyman and others, but he's still around to tell the story of how they treated them up there, how they would live up there and didn't know from day to day whether or not they were going to come up out of there. That's terrorism within itself. That's inhumane punishment within itself. But go back to the court system. The Supreme Court and them know that. Even when we started filing lawsuits in the prison about the inhumane condition, it was the Supreme Court that changed the rules of how inmates could even file lawsuits against their conditions and changed it. It goes all the way up to the United States government and supporting mass incarceration. So we're not going to get no justice from the Supreme Court. We got to do what we're doing here in Greenville and in Mississippi and throughout there. We got to start from locally putting our own people in offices that's going to give us the opportunity to be able to change local policies and statutes. And then from there, we begin to go on and begin to put more people in state offices that now can begin to change, because we are still in Mississippi dealing with 1890 Constitution that they changed in 1890 because of black men was voting and they was putting their own people in office and white folks in 1890 came together and rewrote the Constitution. And the Constitution that they rewrote, Michelle Alexander called it, she called it transformation, where she's saying that they wrote the Constitution in 1890 that today, in 2021, white folks are still in the governorship because of the way they wrote it. We are right now today in Mississippi are filing lawsuits now off of gerrymandering and demanding that the state legislature and others change the laws in regards to how they are splitting up these districts. But we got to do that. We are in a position that we've never been in for, that we can change our condition. What happened to Parkland Farm? That came to black people coming together and saying no more.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, you're right. And I'm looking at an article by the Honorable Minister Sparkin that talks about the key to success in doing for self. And I know when we talk about doing for self, we're talking about the conditions of the prisons, the violent and unsafe conditions, but we also need to talk about how we can pool our resources so we can hire attorneys or we can bill. So we look at the minister talking about how we're throwing our money away foolishly. He says, last year, black people spent $2 billion on alcohol alone. If we would stop drinking and put that $2 billion to work, every black college in America would be finally supported. And I know that that is, you know, we're talking about prison conditions, but we do know also that alcohol and drugs, those are traps, you know, that sometimes ensnare our people. So I wanted to just add that.
And when you say that, let's go back again to when we was talking about the prison conditions, and we all came to Jackson, Mississippi. In January.
And you know what, Brother Muhammad, I have another sister that we're going to bring on.
Sure.
Her name is Sister Danielle Holmes, and she's been trying to get in.
Yes.
She's with the Poor People's Campaign and Mississippi Coalition for Prison Reform.
Yeah.
Sister
yes,
Danielle Holmes, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, sister.
Yes, ma'am. Greetings.
Hey, how
greetings
are you?
To you.
Greetings
yes,
to
ma'am.
All of you all. And thank
you
for having
me. Yeah, we're fine. We're
Excuse
fine.
Me.
Thank you for taking your time to come on. You know, we've got a group of people on the line, our listeners, and we've been discussing the recent Justice Department's finding on the conditions of at Mississippi State Penitentiary, that's Parchman. There's a finding of the violations of the Constitution. They're saying that it's cruel and unusual punishment, the safety conditions, the inhumane conditions. And we're trying to just get as much on-the-ground understanding of what's going on down there that we can. And so I just thank you so much for calling, and please share anything you'd like to tell us and, you know, tell us what you do.
Absolutely. Again, my name is Danielle Holmes. I'm a national social justice organizer with Repairs of the Breach and Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. I lead the Mississippi Prison Reform Coalition, and the Mississippi Prison Reform Coalition is actually led by the Mississippi Poor People's Campaign. This coalition actually was launched right at the brink of all the bloody battles over in Parchman, but not just Parchman. At that time when that bloody battle happened at Parchman, you had other facilities where violence were erupting at the same time. And so the reason that we are here is because of those that are on the inside incarcerated. And so we have to commend those men who were brave enough to reach out, to tell their story, to record, document their story, their conditions, the bloody battles, and actually get it out here into the public so that we could, in turn, fight on their behalf. And so a lot of times we see individuals wanting to take credit for their work, but we must give credit to those brave men inside who actually were just sick and tired of being sick and tired, and they needed and wanted their story heard. So that's why we're even here today. I want to say that the Department of Justice findings, they are what they are, and we knew what, and the report is what we already knew. So we don't celebrate that as a victory, right, because the conditions are still the same, and the individuals are still having to live in those conditions. So what the Department of Justice findings were was a confirmation of what those on the inside who are living in those conditions had been crying out, you know, in regards to writing DOJ, writing the governor, writing coalitions, writing the ACLU, the Mississippi Center for Justice and Southern Poverty Law Center, and other legal entities. And so the problem we have is that during all of that uprising and the governor deciding to step in and put a Band-Aid on the issue and shut down Unit 29 rather than close the Parchment. And then a month after all of the commotion had died down, what individuals don't know is that Unit 29 is back open after it has been deemed inhumane and unfit to even live in, right? And so those incarcerated are reliving those conditions of what happened in 2020, in the ending of 2019 into 2020 and current. So, it's very traumatic, pushing for our demand. We're still in conversations with the Department of Justice around the inhumane treatment of those incarcerated. And so we'll keep pushing for here in the state of Mississippi as it relates to the criminal justice reform to reduce incarceration in Mississippi and to remove the harmful conditions and policies and practices within the Mississippi Department of Corrections and remedy the harm, creating community oversight boards and conducting full and independent investigations into the deaths previously and those that are even happening now, because as of late last year, we had an individual that was killed and being bullied and reported, and nothing happened, and that individual was killed over at Central Mississippi Correctional Facility. And so we had one the other week, last week, that was stabbed up at East Mississippi Correctional Facility. We have a guy right now that's in Unit 29, the unit that's supposed to be shut down, that's calling out saying, hey, I'm in fear of my life. I've been asked to be put in protective custody. He's heard that individuals are threatening to throw gas fluid on him and light him up. Well, we know that this too happened in 2020 as well, right? Social media, it's on YouTube where you see an individual that was on fire by another incarcerated individual. And so these issues are going on and they're not being addressed by MDOC. We've reached out to the Commissioner Beryl Kane's office. Nothing has been done, and so we are back talking and giving our reports to the Department of Justice, and we'll continue to push and fight like hell for the living and mourn the dead.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for sharing, because some of the conditions that you mentioned, of course, everything that you're telling us is important, you know, for us, because we are really trying to soak up. And so with even some of the living conditions, like you talked about the violence, what are some of the living conditions that are really being complained about as being violations?
So you're seeing the mold. Yeah, the mold, the mildew, the mold and mildew on trays.
On trays.
Showers, there are holes in the floors, water coming in through the cells, right, is and is setting up. You have individuals that are actually getting sick from these living conditions. But we also know that sometimes when you have environmental issues, those conditions don't necessarily affect you right away, but they have a long-term effect on you. So 10, 15, 20 years from now, you may develop a rare form of cancer, and you get to thinking, well, how did I just get this? This is hereditary. No one in my family has ever had this kind of cancer. But you have to go back and look at your environment and where you live. And many of these folks, even to this day, those who have gotten out of prison that have lived in those conditions have been stricken with cancer, rare cancer and lung diseases from those very living conditions at Margin.
And to add to what she's saying as well, and you're talking about living conditions as well, and it has a lot to do with the climatic conditions of the weather at a certain time. When it's cold, there's no heat in a lot of those units. People are living in there like they're living outside. When it's hot outside, there's no air conditioning unit in there, and many people don't have fans. So the conditions, is like that book was saying, it's worse than slavery. And some people might say, how can you call it worse than slavery? But as you said, because back then during slavery, they looked out for their slaves, so-called captive slave did, because they seen them as being something that if they got sick or if they died, they would lose stock. But today, they don't see those brothers and sisters up in there as no a means of no labor, nothing, because they know just as one go, another can come in there. So it's the living conditions that we are really dealing with, because what the sister just said, it's a dominoes effect with our health, with our psychological problem. We ain't even dealing with the fact that over 40% of those that's incarcerated have mental illnesses, mental challenges. I've walked those walls in the prison system. I know what I'm talking about. Half the people in prison need to be in the mental institution. But in 1980 and 84, when they shut down the funds for mental institutions, then they closed them institutions down, then they start sending them individuals to prison. And this is what we're dealing with now. And so that's got to be a core group of us out here, boots on the ground, that we're not relinquished. But go back to what you said, Sister Pamela, about our resources. When we were down there in Jackson in January of 2020, when we did that rally, one of the points that the LOC made with us, because they kept saying, shut it down, shut it down. And we gave them and explained to them, yeah, you want to shut down Park and the Falls, quit going to Walmart. Quit taking your money to these industries that is really funding the governor. Then they'll negotiate. But as long as we still buy their toilet paper, buy their water, buy their dishwashing liquid, then we don't have no negotiation tool to be able to negotiate with. So that's one of the major pieces that we got to talk about.
We have to look at the long history of parchment and how the conditions have been that way for decades, right? And nothing has actually been changed or any renovations or any upgrades. It's just been that old plantation style living. But then we take gold. We not talk about parchment, and then we go talk about East Mississippi Correctional Facility,
right,
where for over a
right.
month they didn't have hot water. So literally, mm-hmm. like just last week, after we did a phone campaign and to get them hot water. Hot water is back on now, right? And so those mm-hmm. conditions are also, and especially in a pandemic, put folks at a high risk. And so yeah. they are being given a death sentence without being given a death sentence, right?
That's
and,
right.
And it's not fair. And if we don't speak out, if we don't raise our voices, too many times here in Mississippi, we're too passive. We're scared we're going to offend our white allies, or we may say the wrong thing. But I come to beg the difference that if your white allies don't align with your principles, perhaps you may need to align with or find your different allies. You know, we
yes,
can't
ma'am.
Afford to allow our sisters and brothers, because it's folks that look like us are the ones who are really, really the ones that are dropping dead in prison, right? They go in
right.
with a 5-year sentence, and in 8 months they're dead, right, because of the living conditions
right.
inside of those walls.
And yes, I don't want us to forget the fact.
We're silent here in Mississippi. Still.
And I don't want us to
die from the living conditions in Parchment. And so he went in healthy and came out dead.
That's right. And we don't want to forget the fact that now it used to be, and we said a lot of since we're talking today about brothers, but now there's a large majority of black women. When you talk about Sister Pamela, the deep population, there's a large majority of black women now that's being incarcerated a lot more than what we've seen in the last 20 years.
Yes.
And when I'm not sure that are really catching hell. They are locking them down in one unit. They're taking their jobs away from them. They're giving everything to the men. They're really stripping them of their humanity. Right over at Central Mississippi Correctional Facility, where they've just brought in another woman, closed down one, forgot the county, the satellite, one facility, and brought them all, women's facility, and brought them all over to Rankin County. And now some are sleeping on floors. There's overcrowdingness, right? And now they're getting ready to move all of those women that's already overcrowded into that one unit, 720, and strip them of their jobs, everything, of their classes. You know, and so the unfairness, there's no equity there. And there's that's another fight for a whole different conversation, right? We have so many issues in the state of Mississippi, and it behooves us, if we don't come together, if we don't take to the streets, if we don't be at these white folks to get on their necks like they've been on our necks, we are doomed.
And I'd like to add to that, sister, in the sense that, quickly, and I give it to you sometimes, that today, the white folks are small now. What we have to do is hold our black elected officials accountable, because those are the ones that if we put enough of them up there, will be able to change the law. We're not going to change white folks' ways or traditions. It's not going to happen, but we have the power in that position that will lean toward our interests. That's what we're missing. Political interest and power.
Yeah, because my question, along with your comment on political interest and power, you know, they talk about the stat of 37% of black people in the state of Mississippi, because they say that 70% of the black people, black men, are in Parchment, or 70% of, what is it, of the men in Parchment are black. Is that how that statistic works?
Yes,
I mean, we're overrepresented.
Yeah.
Right. But is there really 37%? I thought, you know, again, I guess it's a high number of black people in the state. It seems to me like there should be more. But, you know, but it does sound like a great ability to put people in power that can meet the needs.
Yeah, 36% is still a large amount when you're talking about 20% of those are elected, are voting age. And all you have to do is that when you look at the governorship and how many votes it took him to get into office, as opposed to looking at how many black people did not vote, then you, when you look at those projections, you can see that we do have the opportunity to put people in office that we need. We just got to do what the sister was saying, boots on the ground, creating an avenue of letting our people understand the power of local and county elections, which in turn turn into state elections, which controls the governorship. And that's what we should be after. We should be looking at 224, 226, that governorship. What can we do? Because with 36%, that means we got one pass laid on, because 80% of those in the, that 36% is right in the Delta. And this has always been the stronghold for Mississippi. That's why Parchment Farm was erected right here in the Delta. But the Delta is on the move.
Yeah.
I'm from the Mississippi Delta. I'm from Greenwood, Mississippi. And, you know, and as a native of Greenwood, like, we have to and be very understanding. In some aspects, you may say the Delta is on the move, but in some aspects, it's not. We have too many young folks that are in the Delta that are not voting, that are not educated, that are not even don't even care about being educated and not even don't even care about the seriousness of what's actually happening and playing out before their very eyes, right? But I contribute that to not to – I don't charge it to them. I charge it to those
right.
that came before them and that came before
right.
us, right? Because Mississippi, for so long, we've been a transactional – the black community has been a transactional community and not relational. We've had individuals who would come in and say, I need you to do this, right, without really building and really – because for me, organizing is relational. I'm building
right.
a relationship
okay.
as I'm trying to get you to get my people organized. So when I go into communities or when the Poor People's Campaign, we go into communities, we're not just going in to push an agenda, but we're also going in seeing what's the need of this community, right? Because I know that a
right.
hungry mother don't want to hear about voting rights when all I can see right now is I'm going to feed my baby or make sure my lights are on tomorrow. Don't get
right.
cut off. Or make sure I'm having
right.
a roof over my head. And so this thing of just doing, they having a transactional relationship and not really a relational relationship, intimate relationship is what I'm trying to say, has been a very strong problem. And also, we've had a lot of backdooring in Mississippi. We gotta just call it for what it is, right?
Mm.
We have people that have been sitting at the tables who were not concerned about the masses of black folks in Mississippi. They went in at the table, what can you do for me? And not what can you do for my people. And so there's a reason why we're here, this plight and what's going on in Mississippi with black Mississippians, and why we're not seeing any movement, and why these white folks feel that it's okay to wake up every morning and throw insults and slap us in our face and tap dance on our heads, and because they've been given their pass, right? And so those who have given them the pass, they know they can't speak out because they'll be exposed.
And you're absolutely right, sister. But when we're talking about power, I mean, from the sense of we look at the black politicians in Mississippi, the average age now is 50 and under. Whereas 25 years ago, like you said, those individuals now 70 and 80, those were the individuals that was what I said, crossing the farm was created for, to break them. So those individuals, like, and I can say that like the Jordans and others, those are not the individuals that are becoming the mayor, becoming the city councils, becoming the county supervisors now. This is a new generation of black folks. But what they're missing is, as you and I, you just said, grassroots organizing and stimulating the minds of the people to understand the importance of us getting out to vote. In the past,
yeah.
they didn't have that interest. And then we got to go back to the school system. That's why it's important for us to be out there, because the school system is where our people are dumbed down. And so
yeah.
what we are demanding now is that when we're talking about prison reform, we're talking about the resources now from these mayors and so forth. Bring this money down. Let us open up these transitional houses that we can take these little brothers and be able to do for them from a black perspective what the juvenile and what the prison system is not doing for them. So open up them purses and give us those that money for them transit centers, because we got models that work. But now we got young black people in them offices that will listen. But everybody got their own agenda. But when we come with one agenda to Anton, we come with one agenda to Eric Simmons, when we come with one agenda to Derek Simmons, they're going to back that agenda.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just I want to say, if anyone has a question or a comment, please press the number 1 to get into the host queue. We're taking your questions and your comments on this very, very riveting discussion that's going on. I love it, because as y'all are talking in the grassroots, and you started out about how the young men inside the prison risked themselves by exposing what was going on, my question is, are their families and loved ones who are speaking out? Are they? Do they have support groups? You know, I mean, because it becomes very personal in Black America when it's our family being incorporated, our children
right.
being incarcerated.
Right.
Anybody?
And what you're saying?
Yeah. So I will
that,
say that in January of 2020, when this bloody battle took place over in Parchman, when we had the big rally with Roc Nation, when we led the first, very first protesting at the governor's mansion before. There was even a Rock Nation thought of when the coalition Mississippians just decided to band together. You know, we were going to speak out. There were family members that were there in that crowd of protest. It was family members that went into the Capitol to take the demands into the governor and the lieutenant governor, and we were turned around and blocked out and locked down and all of that. And we still made our way in there, right? And so, yes, to answer your question.
Okay.
To add on to that,
what we did as well was to stimulate, because as the sister was saying, a lot of those parents were fearful. They didn't want to really step out or either put their pictures out there, their face out there, scared of the retaliation of their loved one. So what we also did was have them to do a letter campaign, because they had shut them out of visiting. And so we had them do a letter campaign where had the brothers to write letters to send out, just talking about the different conditions. So it created another form of activity for the parents of the loved ones in there to have, that they can see now they have someone that they could talk to or would take them letters now and be able to publish it. And they felt that they had somebody working with them, and they began to come out and support what we were doing on a larger scale. But after everything went down pandemic hit, our people went right back out into shelter again, so we got to get right back out there again. So I thank God that this article even came out, because it stimulated the thoughts of our people to think about, I remember this. So we can now wake them back up and begin to do grassroots organizing again. So there's an opportunity for us, even though we know this is the same old suit bought over again from 1972-73, when we did the same lawsuit to Mississippi, and they did the same thing, came out with the same report, told them that they had to do so many changes. They did it for a few years and went right back to the same conditions. This time, it ain't going to happen.
Well, we know that Mississippi will take the lead to do the same as Alabama. Alabama, the Department of Justice had its finding on the Department of Alabama, Department of Corrections, even had a lawsuit against Alabama Department of Corrections. They failed to adhere to the lawsuit, the findings, the DOJ rulings. Mississippi will do the same. We're going to have to take this to a federal level. And so our national co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, Dr. William Barber II, has already met with the Assistant Attorney General in D.C. With the Department of Justice. We will be going, the Mississippi Prison Reform Coalition will be going to D.C. to sit down in a hearing with the Department of Justice and the Attorney General's office there. We're going to push and fight like hell that these changes take place.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And I would just like add to that. Go
right
on, Papa.
Oh,
time.
Go right ahead. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
I was just saying, and at the end of the day, our change is going to be boots on the ground. Until we change that governorship, Washington, D.C., and the rest of them, we ain't going to get nothing from them. All the way up to the Supreme Court, they benefit from our condition. We got to change the leadership.
Well, we first have to fight as well, right? We got a redistricting fight that's going on right now.
There you go. Yes, ma'am. That's right.
Right. They're constantly trying to block out the voice of the black people, and we're still talking about what we need to be doing. We need to be on the ground right now.
That's
right. Now, while we're on this radio, we need to be out here being on the ground. So this is why I don't care, you know, what title that gives me. I'm going to always be in my community, wherever
yes,
I
ma'am.
Go.
Yes, ma'am.
Right, because I
yes,
know
ma'am.
Where the change is going to take place. It ain't going to take
yes,
place
ma'am.
With us going back and forth of what we should and should be doing, because we're going to have arguments.
Yes, ma'am.
We're going to have disagreements. Our egos are going to clash and all of that, right? But we got to get to the heart of the people. And
absolutely.
Every instance where we can use a real-life situation that's happening in their life to relate to what's going on as it relates to policy and law and all of that, and connect the dots, that's how we're going to be able to get people to really understand and see what's going on. Just had to do it the other day regarding health care, and a family lost their loved one who didn't have health care, the cancer, right? And the doctors gave them all this woo-woo of the medicine wasn't right, and the mother was going to come out, just give her a day or so. The next day she was dead. You know, It's just so much that goes with that.
It is. But as you're saying, I think they say our commonalities are greater than our differences. You know, that's why we can talk as Muslims and Christians and non-religious people, and you know, because our issue is really that we're black, you know, and we have common ancestry, and we talk about this survival is forcing us, because we're now beginning to look at famine, you know, we're looking at supply chain, food shortages, other things. We talked last week about the juveniles and how our babies in these educational systems are now, you know, being targeted and having the results that they are. So I think the time is forcing us to sit down. You know, you're from Greenwood. My family's from Greenville eventually. So, you know, before you were able to get in, we discussed the migration that took a lot of our people out of their home in the Delta. But we, one of our sisters who is the student national minister, she's spokesperson for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, she oftentimes talks about overpopulating areas as we, you know, the migration is kind of going in reverse now. You see more people coming back to the South from the Midwest as the demographics are changing. So, you know, you all are our concern. You know, this is my home. As I'm listening, I'm sitting here, you know, kind of choked up. So things are going to get better. That's what I think. And that's why I'm so thankful that y'all took the time to come on. So, again, if anybody has a question or a comment while we're listening to this thought-provoking conversation, go right
ahead. And while they're doing that, I just wanted to mention about Greenville. And, again, what we're trying to do to show as a model about self-governing and collective efforts. In the sense that we have the same problem all over the country, but in Mississippi as well, when we talked about the juvenile system. We got juvenile detention centers now that they don't supply the deodorant, the hygiene, personal hygiene products no more. Those juveniles got to buy that. So the conditions is even worse in the juvenile system. However, what we've done in Greenville, we've been able to put our own black female judges on those benches. We've been able to have our own black prosecuting attorneys in those positions that now when those young people come up there and we have alternatives as opposed to prison, now they're sitting at the table with us and they're talking about alternatives. This is a form of self-governing and what we want to talk
about. That's right.
Talking about
That's right,
how
brother.
Can we make changes.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
No. You're right.
That's right. That's powerful.
I agree. Yeah.
Let's move on over there to Greenwood and get them to understand that white mayor in an 80% black town, you know, don't love them.
Oh,
right?
Coming.
And so
yes, ma'am.
That's
yes, ma'am.
Story.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You're absolutely right. But, again, we have to show a model because one of the things about Mississippi and black people in Mississippi, they got to see itself there. They're not going to be the first ones out there. And so we're looking at Greenville, which is the largest city in the Delta. But we always brag about that, Sister Don, is that we know we got the most intelligent black politician in Mississippi in the Simmons twins. Want some young, intelligent brothers. That if we are on the boots on the ground supporting grassroots organizing, then they're going to try to do as much as they can. We don't necessarily always agree, but one thing about it, they don't suppress our voice and our position.
That's right. Yeah, and you know, and we were talking earlier about the parallels to the convict leasing system, and I think the last parallel that I wanted to mention tonight is how they talked about the second, according to Oshinsky, I think, who wrote, what is this, Worse Than Slavery. He said the second year of operation, Parchment earned $185,000 for the state
That's
of Mississippi.
Right.
The modern day equivalent of roughly $5 million.
That's
for
right.
those in prison
That's
at
right.
Parchment, and that was then, 90% of whom were black. They quoted to say it was legalized torture, and they go on. So you know, we're at a point now where we're looking at what our ancestors have gone through, and I think, you know, what that means for us today is very important, because the models are really the same. Does anybody know what kind of income is being earned with some of this prison labor? Is that something that happened?
Said it in the final call. The sister said in the final call, $30 a month, maybe. Maybe $30 a month. But if you don't work in no real job, then you might get $10 a month. See, the state and the federal court is mandated that all state prisons got to give some type of stipend to all prisoners. So they give $9 a month if you don't work. But if you work, then they'll pay you $1 a day. But however, if you work in like Tyson or UPS industry that they have in the prison, now you might make $60 a month, $80 a month.
Wow.
So it's still hard labor. It's still a slavery. That's what he meant when he said worse than slavery, or slavery by another name, you see. And
yes.
So it's still the condition.
Wow.
And so those same individuals that's in prison working in Tyson and UPS, when they come out of jail, they can't even get a job in those same industries. And so that is what we're working with the black city officials here, is to work on this expungement program where these young brothers are coming out. Then the first thing we do, we take them through the expungement program, and we look at the city department and see if what job do they have on there. They got a black box, a non-black box code in Greenville, Mississippi. If you've been to prison, that ain't got nothing to do with the reason why whether we are hiring you or not.
Yeah, and you know, it's just so much. I just wanted to say for the record that some of the quotes that I was quoting came from, let's see, The Lasting Legacy of Parchment Farm, the prison modeled after a slave plantation. That's by the Innocence Project staff, 52920 article, as well as the Final Call article entitled Mississippi Injustice, Extreme Sentencing, Keeping Blacks in Jail for Life. Because, again, as we're talking about this slavery, that article goes on to talk about how the carceral system can be traced back to the 13th Amendment. And as long as we view incarceration as slavery, which is technically under the 13th Amendment, you know, we view incarcerated people as revenue generators instead of people who are incarcerated for a period of time to be rehabilitated. You know, and I think that's so important, because as we were speaking last week about the juveniles and their time and their interaction in these systems, the lawyers, we all agree to, is that a lot of times their time makes them harden. It increases the likelihood that they will, you know, be recidivist, so that as opposed to, you know, rehabilitation and looking at what are the needs of this child, because it's really an outcry with a lot of our youth. So this is what we're talking about.
And that came from the 60s, and the 60s up under Kennedy, when they first came up what was called this a Great America, a concept, where they begin to talk about the discrimination that was going on with blacks and how they wanted to begin to bring a fair deal down. But by 64, they began to change it now, and it went from blacks being supported in certain social issues to now it was a war on poverty, war on crime. So we began, it came from being a victim to we began to become the problem. And so now the solution to the problem that they see, which was us, was control, contain, and lock us up. And so in 1971, there was only 367 people in the prison system in this country. And they had begun to talk about whether the prison system really working and whether they should shut it down or not. And within 3 years after the Nixon administration, and they took the EEOC program away and put in place of it the OLEO, which was the Office of Legal Enforcement Act. and it became the largest agency in this country that was funded by the Congress. And from there, then the Incarceration Act began to come into play, and they started now targeting young black men in the black community. And we begin to realize and see that the same crime that black men were doing, white boys and white men were doing that crime twice, because there's more white folks in America than there is black people. So we begin to realize that we were not being locked up because of we was committing crime. We was being locked up because we were black.
Beautiful. Yes, sir, you're right. Well, we're really down to the end of this show. And Ms. Holmes, I thank you so much for coming on with you represent the Poor People's Campaign and the Mississippi Coalition for Prison Reform. Brother Kareem Muhammad, our powerful brother with the Greenville, Mississippi Local Organizing Committee. And our brother out of Arkansas, Mr. Darby, thank you for adding into this conversation as well. So if you, Ms. Holmes, you want to give out any information on how people can contact you or Brother Kareem, did you want to give us anything, you know, a minute or less? We're closing out, but we thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Sure. We can be reached at, this is, again, me, Danielle. Well, Brother Muhammad, go ahead. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, you go right ahead.
No, I was saying, you go right ahead. That's what I was saying.
Okay, no problem. No problem at all. Sure, we can be reached at the Mississippi Prison Reform let's scratch that. Reach us at info@peoplesadvocacyinstitute.com.
Okay, and that's
and
info
can also
at peoples.
At,
is that peoples with an S? Peoples.
Yes. Advocacy.
And you,
Institute.com.
Okay. All right. Yes, ma'am.
And then there's another email, mprcoalition@gmail.com.
Yes, ma'am.
And
beautiful.
We're also
thank
on
you
Facebook.
So much. Okay.
We're on Facebook as well, Mississippi Prison Reform Coalition.
Okay. Mississippi Prison Reform,
Coalition.
Okay. Beautiful,
yes,
beautiful. Thank you, sis. Yes, go right ahead, Brother Kareem. You got.
Yes. Again, this is the local organizing committee. We have over 5 chapters throughout the South and Southwest region of the South. We are not an organization, but we are a conglomerate of organization, progressive organization, working collectively from a national and a local perspective. At the table, the LOC sits the Nation of Islam, the New Black Panther Party, the National Black United Front, Mississippi on the Move, Poor People's Party, Black Lives Matter, and other local organizations and religious institutions coming together collectively for the purpose of being a liaison between the community and the state and local government, showing models that will work for our people. Our motto is SOS, solving our own situation. Amos Wilson told us that white folks cannot resolve our problem that they created, so it must be a black solution to a black problem. That's what we bring to the table. You can find us on Facebook as well.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you, sister,
and thank
for bringing
you
us on.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And thank you all for listening to A Time for Justice. To hear previous shows, you can log on to Blog Talk Radio, and please also tune in on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time for our sister student minister, Dr. Ava Muhammad. Ask Dr. Ava. I would like to thank Sister Ava Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad, Sister Donna Muhammad with the Elevated Places team. I would also like to thank my producer, Sister Samaya Muhammad, and we invite you all to tune in next week. That's Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Thank you once again for listening. And remember, there's no us without you. So, assalamu alaikum. And we'll talk to you again next week, inshallah.
Black people are not the problem. We are the solution. Peace and love.
That's right. That's right. Beautiful, beautiful. Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.